Welcome everyone to another episode of the Greg McKeown podcast, where we deal obviously in the subject of what really matters and how to design a life that is of the highest quality and so that we can make our highest point of contribution. Today we're joined with an exceptional guest whose life story reads like a script from an inspiring movie. This is Ryan Coogler. Right from the start, Ryan's passion for film, the storytelling was unmistakable. At 13 years old, he found himself wandering the iconic studio lots, absorbing every ounce of movie magic. His curiosity and audacity led him to an extraordinary encounter on the set of the beloved TV show Cheers at Paramount Studios. There, a young Ryan articulated his dream of becoming a director to none other than Ted Danson, sparking an incredible opportunity. Ted, impressed by Ryan's enthusiasm, clarity of vision, offered him the chance to write and direct his own short film. The result was The Question, starring heavyweights like Ted Danson, Kirstie Alley, Woody Harrelson, and George Wendt. It's an incredible feat at almost any age, never mind as a teenager. So you get a sense of how Ryan was thinking about his life from the beginning of his life. Since then, Ryan has not only sustained that fiery passion, but also channeled it into a successful career spanning film, entrepreneurship, strategic business development. So his principles are simple, but they're profound. Be kind, communicate effectively, never lose the drive to make things happen, no matter the scale of the challenge. Today, Ryan is a seasoned entrepreneur with multiple successful ventures under his belt, and curiously, and I'm interested to get into this, all at the same time. Not sure if it's essentialist or not, but it might be. Maybe there's something that we can all learn from it. As we talk today, we'll uncover the degree to which Ryan holds on to that youthful enthusiasm, that anything's possible, that anything's achievable. So please join me in welcoming the visionary, the filmmaker, the entrepreneur, Mr. Ryan Coogler. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. And very well said. My God, that was magnificent intro. I appreciate it.
Well, that's kind of you. And I'm so glad to have you here. I think you just start from the top for us. Maybe just even a little bit before the 13-year-old adventure that you had. I mean, when was the very first time you thought, it's filmmaking for me? That's what it's about for me.
It's a good question. So my parents were divorced. My mother was in Los Angeles, so I would go visit her from Chicago. And on spring break, Christmas break, summer breaks, I would go see her. And she was actually in the film business, and she did PR for movies. There's actually a title on a credit of every movie called Unit Publicist. So she would sometimes take me to the set of TV shows from old TV shows like Three's Company, yes, ironically that, on movie sets of B-movies, like something called Mortuary Academy. And I just thought it was very neat. So I'd go with her to these sets and just kind of hang out while she did work. And I was just a little kid, and then I'd walk around and, you know, I'd meet different stars and celebrities. Like I saw them film the original Beetlejuice, which was just two sound stages away, and saw Michael Keaton walking around in his outfit. And it was just always something exciting. And I just, there is a vibe, there's a harmonic, there's something that happens when you're around movies getting made that's just unbelievable, which is why so many people want to move to LA and be an actor, a writer, a director. So I got the bug. I drank the Kool-Aid and got into it.
Define for anyone who hasn't been on a set like that, like in a single word, what is that vibe?
Excitement.
Is it?
Yeah, there's just something, you know, you're in this big building, which, you know, is just four walls and a ceiling, and it's got all these sets made of wood and couches and everything that's there, and they're filming, and there's all these crew there, and there's lights and just a lot, and then the actors are there. And I mean, the things I saw going to sets after that, which led up to me being 13, from Bruce Willis to, you know, Gregory Hines to Billy Crystal, just different sets I would walk on. It was just fascinating just to go there and watch it and just see it. And I was just a little kid, just like a little pest on a set and, you know, just watching. And that's what led to the whole Ted Danson. Kids like, well, what are you doing here? Why are you here? You know, where's your mom? Where's your dad? Where's your, you know, guardian? What are you doing here? So it was just the excitement and energy of what was happening on a set.
So you had exposure, and that exposure then just drew out of you a curiosity. Although it didn't necessarily have to do that, because a different person could have had the same exposure and just not found that aspect interesting. They may have found some other element interesting. It's hard to know quite what it is that draws us to certain things and away from other things. But then you snuck onto the set of Cheers, if I understand right.
Yeah, snuck onto the lot of Paramount. So that was me going with my mother at a young age. And then actually my family moved to my father, who I lived with, moved to Los Angeles. So now I had the best of both worlds. I lived in the city with my natural mother and my natural father. So I would, then what happened is I had a bike and I decided, hey, I have no plans for the summer of 87, which was when I was 13-ish. And why don't I go ride around to all the movie studios and when all this there, you know, there was a lot of locations where they would film. And I decided just to walk on each location or walk on each studio lot, which you can't do today because you need ID and passes and your name to be on a list. It's much different.
Well, you can, but it takes an even higher level of initiative to make it happen. And higher risk.
Yes, yeah, a higher risk. I mean, trust me, I snuck onto a lot of studio lots, and I was kicked off of two because I walked in the wrong way. I changed my pattern and got caught. So you will get caught. It's not something you can do today because I, you know, do business with some movie studios, and I go there, and your name has to be on a list, which has to be called in by executive ABC. So I snuck onto the Paramount lot and wandered, or I would go there for a whole day. Like literally I'd go on at 9 a.m., park my bike, chain it up and walk around and just go to each, you know, soundstage, which is the building they film shows at. And if there's 25 soundstages, there's 25 places to go.
It sounds like not only a scene from, but almost a section of the Fablemans movie.
Yes, yes. People actually said that, hey, there's a similarity between you and Steven Spielberg because he went on to Universal and then wound up making Jaws, and here he is today.
Yes. And so you watched the movie, I assume, and what did that bring to you? I mean, there's more than a few threads that seem to parallel the story that he's describing, at least in those formative years.
Well, I won't compare myself to Steven Spielberg, number one. He is an artist, he's a director, he's an icon. As we progress through this story, I actually learned that my artistic side is not as great as other people, which is why I didn't follow through to become a director of movies. I found myself more as someone who produces things and gets things done, which leads to this call, which leads to this podcast, which leads to this, what you're doing and the message you sent. So well done. But anyway, so yeah, I saw some similarities there, but in the movie, and Steven, he was a true artist and saw the beauty and aestheticness of everything.
So I think in a sense you're saying, well, that isn't at all, that doesn't really name it for me. There was some magic that overlaps, but there was a decision point in which you realized my competence isn't the artistry, it's what?
Getting things done. So yes, it's not the artistry. It was getting things done, which is another job, another hat, another post on a movie, which is called a producer. Someone who arranges and makes things, makes the movie actually happen. He hires the artist, he hires the actors, you know, he hires the director, he hires the writer. I was more the guy that put everything together. So with this little short that I made that's only 2.5 minutes long, 3 minutes long, I was the one that, you know, found the scene and got a buddy of mine to film it and got my another buddy to help write it and then made sure that Ted Danson and Kirstie Alley still wanted to do it because, you know, they're pretty busy. And that was probably the biggest challenge is getting them to confirm and hold, you know, and to stick to the commitment of making it. Because, you know, sure, it's easy for someone to say, hey, let's go do this. And then it's like, you know, actors can say, people can say anything they want. And then do they follow through with it, if you know what I mean?
Yes, I do know what you mean. You still in touch with Ted Danson now?
No, I haven't spoken to them since. And I don't even know if it's even in their mind, but I actually am going to put the video that I made finally and publicize it and promote it finally this year. But obviously I can't charge for it. I can just put it on YouTube and see what happens.
Well, it'd be so curious to see that happen. Now it's a part of Americana in some ways. You know, it's a piece of history, a moment in time for these actors who have continued to go on and create and be a part of so many people's memories, really.
Yes, I think Woody Harrelson is probably doing the best out of everyone. The guy's in a famous hit movie every year now.
How did you know that production was the thing for you? Producing, that's where I want to focus.
because I was able to get things done. I was able to make it happen. So anyone else that was offered this opportunity by Ted Danson probably would have persisted and said, hey, can we do this? Can we do this? And Ted, you know, his schedule was very, what you read in the news about actors having schedule, you know, conflicting schedules and very busy is true. So it was me getting a hold of him. And honestly, I somehow got his home number and called him at home and said, hey, let's do this, after calling his office every single week. And then finally, you know, 4 or 5 months later, he gave me a day, which was a lunch hour he had, and said, let's do this. So I found that I was able to make this happen. And there's the sequel to this, too, that I can explain after your question.
Well, how did you get his number?
I have to go back in my memory. I think that his assistant got sick of me calling his office and just said, here's his phone number. You just call him yourself. And she probably shouldn't have done that. And he was not happy that I called him at home. Trust me, that was not good.
This episode is sponsored by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. So whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person point-of-sale system, whenever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. So sell more with less effort, thanks to Shopify Magic, which is your AI-powered all-star. In my experience with every business that I have built, including this podcast, there are breakthrough moments, and those moments are often the result of finding the right partner. And I think that's a way to think about Shopify, because no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Greg, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Greg now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Greg.
Nevertheless, what you learned was, if I just keep persisting enough, something can happen.
100% agree. 110% agree. That is
magic,
the key.
Can happen.
It's the key to anything. If you just keep persisting in your goal and your passion. So I had a goal. I had a passion. I wanted to make this movie because at the time I wanted to be a director. So I would still go to the Paramount lot on the weekend and I would just walk up to his office and see if he was there. I would still go onto the Cheers set. Oh, no, they're already closed. You know, they're not filming anymore type thing. So and I was never, you know, so I just kept persisting. And then I got him to commit to a day in the winter of, you know, what is it, 1987 or 88. And we filmed it. It literally took 1 hour and we cut it down to, you know, 2.5 minutes. And he got, you know, Kirstie Alley there. He got Woody Harrelson there. He got George Wendt there. They just read it on, you know, on there and they kind of improvised a little bit and they did it. I mean, it's not the highest quality of writing or filming, but for a 13-year-old, it's okay.
It was like the original Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I haven't seen the original, but sure. Well, David already had 10, 20, 30 years of acting and directing.
Well, precisely. But all I mean to say is that show is half scripted, half spontaneous. So you have an intent and have to figure it out as you go. And so it's not just a free-for-all, but it isn't something that you're just purely learning lines. And that's part of what seems to have made it raw and made it work. So
yes,
what did this lead to then, the encore for you?
The encore was, so as I told you, I would go around to the studios. I made friends. I made friends in all these different departments at the studios because they'd all say, who are you and what are you doing here? Entertainment Tonight, we all know that TV show. So I made friends with somebody there. And I happened to tell him what I did one day and he went, what? And he was just as shocked. So then they actually edited the video for me for free. And they did an interview with me. And we're going to air a whole segment on it during something called the writer's strike. So they needed something to promote and show. But then, of course, their producer, they didn't run it. But the point is after you make a film or you make a video, you have to pay to have it edited, which costs $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 in today's times. Back then, it probably cost me $2,500. which in the 80s. I didn't have that money. I'm a 13-year-old kid. That's a lot of lemonade. I have to sell a lemonade stand to edit this video. So the encore is I got them. Again, here I am making something happen. I produced something, and I got was able to organize and put together for a national TV show to then edit it for me for free and then interview me on how it worked.
Yeah, it's an extension of this. It's not just initiative and it's not just persistence. It is network persistence.
Yes. It's
somebody who's saying, I have the chutzpah to go to the place where the people are and to walk around meeting people.
Yes.
And sometimes that's not going to work. And sometimes occasionally gets you into trouble. But a lot of the time you just meet the people and start having conversations you wouldn't have before.
It's like you and I go to a convention or a conference and you go to a networking event and you walk up and you got to have the chutzpah, like you said, to go up and go, hey, I'm Ryan. Nice to meet you. This is what I do, which is not very common in, I think, a different generation today, because most of it's done online via, you know, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, where you send someone a message and say, hey, I'm so-and-so. Can we do some business? Where face-to-face, door knocking, as they call it, in the old days, it takes a lot.
What does it take in that moment, in your opinion?
Confront, decision, intention.
But break it down to the millisecond. I mean, there's a certain point at which you have to literally, in that case, get on the bike, go over to the place, put the bike somewhere, enter a building, meet somebody. I mean, what is it that... what is the thought process that allows you to let go of the fears that everybody else has or to persist even though you feel exactly the same fears that others have?
It's a good question, by the way. Very well put. I think that everyone has a gift. Everyone has a talent. Everyone has coding, a chip inside of them that gets them to do something more or different or better than the other person. I didn't have a fear of doing this at all, to be honest with you. And I still don't. If I had to go into a building and go meet someone and just walk around, I'd have no problem with it where others might. Totally agree. So what in the millisecond, it's like, hey, what am I going to do today? I'm going to go and meet someone or learn about how a camera works. Because when I said I would go to the sets and I was like talking to the camera operators and going, how does this Panavision camera work? Well, this is how it works. And this is what you do. And you turn this on. Okay, cool. Now I know this. So it was just something I wanted to do and something I wanted to learn. And anyone has a passion for something, whether it's playing golf or playing basketball or, you know, creating some code that some new app, which probably I could never do, but they can do it. Just like someone can play basketball and always get a three-pointer, which I can never do.
There was an intent of real, genuine, unscripted curiosity.
Yes, I agree. And when I said before, if you have an intention and you have a purpose and you have a goal, you're going to get what you want. And then you just have to persist and just keep going after it. And I think that's what I'm gifted with, or my talent is that, like, I own an event business. If somebody calls me and says, I want to do an event and I want to have the space shuttle there and I want it to have an explosion at the bottom, I want this, that's no fear, no problem. I'll get it done.
So transition is then to what it is that you do now, this three business integrated company of companies.
Yes. So basically, after I filmed that, I went to school every day. And then my parents moved to Florida. So I kind of left LA. So therefore, I kind of lost the umph of making this, because your listeners are going to go, wait a second, he made this short and then it just went away. So just a quick little 5 second. I moved out of state and could no longer pursue my passion or gift or whatever to direct movies or make shorts with famous stars.
I finished school. It didn't go away. You went away.
Went away. Thank you. I went away. And I just took a different path in life, just like everyone gets to a crossroad, you know, the moving truck moves away and you go, okay, I guess we're going this way now. Mm. So
And so then
I got out of school and I worked for my father, who had a family business, which was supplying videos, VHS videotapes, to video rental stores. So I kind of figured, well, I kind of want to be in the movie business. So this is kind of an interesting way to do this. Okay, so I'm like at the back end of the tail of the food chain of movie making now. I'm now selling it to video stores so people can rent it. So I got into that business, which is just basically buying and selling, wholesaling movies, which to me is a widget, which is anything that's sold. Obviously, people don't buy DVDs anymore. It's kind of gone and they just stream it. But that is one of the businesses that just kept pivoting and pivoting, where now that business is a wholesale business and distributes pretty much anything and everything, from pens to phones to couches to whatever. I'm in the whole, I own a business, one of three, that is in the wholesale business. And that is something I do. And then from there, I kept growing because, as we've talked about, I had this intention, this purpose of like just getting stuff done and basically just started doing some other things, which is create an event business, create a marketing business. And here we are today. And I'm open to your question. Sorry.
So tell us about the event business. What does, you know, what can't you do?
Well, I don't want to do weddings and bar mitzvahs and stuff and holiday anniversary parties. But no, basically what happened is, so I have this wholesale business, I'm doing this. And then I had a friend basically say, hey, we're putting on this charity run. We're a nonprofit. Can you help us with this 5K charity run walk? Everyone's going to a 5K run walk with their friend. I'm like, okay, I'll help out. And I started helping out. And then that passion, I guess, to get something done, to create something, to create an event like I did with making a movie, a short, back in 1987, 88, came back to reignited. And I said, huh, I know how to get people together. I know how to do this. I know how to get this to happen. I know how to get this person in place, and started an event business because I did it so well that actually people in Los Angeles started calling and saying, hey, I heard you did this event. Can you help us with ours? And I went, well, I was doing this for free for a nonprofit, but sure, I guess I can do it and I'll charge you. And then here I do 35 events all over the country now.
Now you say 35 events, is that per year? You're just, this is the number that you're doing now?
Yeah, it's average. It's between 30 and 40.
And so give us a sense of like, you know, give me a sense of one of the most surprising events that you've put together.
So we just did an event actually 2 weeks ago at the Burbank Airport here in Los Angeles. Every airport is required to do a fire drill, basically a simulated plane crash. This is for the fire department to keep up their certification with the FAA to show that they know how to handle emergencies. So we helped with the logistics of that event. So we got a C-17 plane there. We hired 50 actors. There's a plane that's a model plane that gets lit on fire. The fire department comes, the big, you know, all those big trucks that you see come and they put out the fire. All the firemen come out in the ambulance and they come and check the people and make sure the 50 people are okay. And they do a triage center, you know, green, red, and yellow. That's an interesting event.
Yeah. I mean, I've flown in and out of Burbank so many times, extremely easy to navigate airport. So who hired you to do that?
The airport did. So because I'm local in Burbank and because I'm an event company and we've done other events for them, they're building a new airport there. So the next time you fly in about 3 years, it'll be a whole new terminal. So we did a groundbreaking event for them a couple times. We've done this event for them before the FAA emergency. So this is just one of many. So because you asked for something kind of neat and cool, this is neat and cool because we, you know, they're bringing in 30 fire trucks. They're bringing in 10 ambulances. They're bringing in planes and helicopters and it's a whole production that takes about 2 hours. And we helped, you know, you bring in actors who have to have makeup. So this guy's got to have a cut on his face so that the fire department sees that person, goes, okay, in the triage, you're in red because you got blood creeping out. And then we put some bodies, you know, fake bodies out, not real people, but plastic rubber bodies. And then they see those as dead people and they decide what to do with them. But anyway, so it's a whole production. The airport hires us because they have to do this. And then we feed all the people too. So we set up everything, tents, tables, chairs, to all the other logistics that are needed.
Is this just training of the emergency personnel or every employee that works at the airport?
Emergency personnel. Mm-hmm. And LA City. So the LA City, because if there is an actual real plane crash, it's what you call a 3-alarm fire, whatever, but everyone's brought in. So right. Everyone that's local has to come in because if you have, you know, some, what were there, 20 dead bodies and 45 hurt people, that's not just the airport fire department can handle that.
Yeah, I don't know quite what to call it, but this is like a live movie. You know, this is the event that you're putting together. And yeah, give us another example.
Well, we do runs. So we did the STEM. So there's, you know, the whole thing in the last 5 years about STEM, which is science, research, all that. So the LA Clippers basketball team here in LA, they hosted a STEM convention for kids. So with an event like that, it's at the LA Convention Center. They brought in some 15,000 kids a day from all of the public schools. So we had to bust them all in. We had to get them into the convention center, get them cycled through, get them back out 2-3 hours later and back onto their buses and out. So these are the type of events we do. So we had to go arrange 150 buses, shut down roads, get the kids in, security, food, get them all back out, get them, you know, and then clear everything up. So that's just another event. So that was for 30,000 people. So we're doing different events. You know, we do running events where so at the LA Marathon or any marathon that happens, there's always school groups that participate in these runs as kind of a nonprofit type thing. And we help train the kids in Los Angeles to do the run. There's about 4,000 of them. So similar thing, we do 5 training races. We shut down 18 miles of road in LA. So we're hiring, you know, 50 parking enforcement, ambulances, fire trucks, police, everything. So the event business is far and wide. So it's a little bigger than the short I made with Ted Danson and Woody Harrelson, because there I just filmed it on the lot and it was just a few people and it was pretty simple. So I've escalated my career into having the passion to getting something done and achieving a goal of, you know, putting out an event for tens of thousands of people.
I've spent a few years living in LA and working with Hollywood companies. And one of the unusual things about the industry is the speed with which you build an organism that exists only for a moment. You know, yes. In a sense, they're heartbeat corporations. You know, there is this willingness, and not just willingness, it's the structure of the industry that the vast majority of people are independent. And so they are brought together to create, hopefully, magic. And then they disappear off. And so it is a network reliant industry more than any other industry. And I think it creates a lot of dysfunction, actually. I think there's a lot of dysfunction in Hollywood that I've observed, distinct and different from the hundreds of industries that I've worked with over the last 25 years. Nevertheless, this part is quite magical. The willingness for people to trust people based on previous experiences and then trust them, hey, this is a good gig, I'll come and join and put this together. And of course, everybody sees this from a distance in any major movie that they watch, because look at the credits, and these days they're just hundreds or thousands of people are involved. So I call it a heartbeat corporation, but you could call it like an Insta City.
I agree with you. That was very well put in how you said it, and I never thought of it that way. Because yes, LA, you know, I do events all over the country. LA is the city where you could get the assets, get the logistics that you need 24 hours a day. Trust me, what you see happen at an event at ours at 3 a.m. is amazing. You know, we set up a whole event at 3, 4, 5 a.m. Everyone shows up at 6, 7. They're all gone by 10, 11. The whole thing is done at 12. And it's funny, when we do events like that, people, you take a picture of the before and after, you go, wait, there was nothing here 6 hours ago, and then you had a circus here, and then it's all gone 6 hours later. And you go, yep, that's the beauty of the event business.
Yeah, but that's it right there, isn't it? It's a circus tent mentality. Mm-hmm. And we think of it now as motion pictures, or, you know, there's different ways of thinking about the industry. It's one of the only industries in the world, as far as I am concerned, the studios themselves do not contain or own the execution function of their own business. The executives are going out into that networked system and saying, well, would you, you know, what's your idea? Give me your idea. Okay, yes, well, we'll pick somebody to produce it and we'll put a team together, a director, and then they do their magic through their networks. I mean, it's a very unusual industry to have so much of the creative function not being under management of the brand that's initiating it. But it seems like you have tapped into part of that industry competence, you know, and muscle memory that exists in that system to be able to create events. I mean, you're calling them events, and I'm not sure that you need to change that word, but really, as you're describing them, they're not really events in the way that maybe people would typically think about them. They're you know, it's like spontaneous movies. It's
production
sets. They're production. They're instant production sets. You know, something like that.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I like your view on it. And yes, it is something that is, you know, we're doing an event in about 3 weeks in Hawaii. So we're doing this for 1,000 people. It's sporting activities. And we're, you know, importing 10, 15 people, meaning we're bringing in our staff, and then we're hiring another 30 or 40 people. And it's just everything. I mean, we're getting everything from kayaks to hundreds of bikes to outriggers to everything. It's spread across four different properties in Hawaii. And so it's a production is what I'm getting to, like you're saying. And it's all brought together for a brief moment in time, and then it all just disbands and it's all gone.
Yeah, and it's like what your core competence is, and you've already tried to articulate this in different words, but it's like you're an executionist. You know, oh, we can't make this happen. Well, here's an executionist, so it'll be done.
Yes. You know,
and so none of these different locations or events concerns you, because even though you don't know necessarily the area, you know, you're willing to do these events in any location, anywhere in the world, if it's the right kind of opportunity, you have a sense of confidence based on this competence. I can find the people. I can put out my, you know, my asset net. You know, what do we need? Well, who has that? Somebody will have those assets. Somebody will have those connections. And if they don't, they'll put me in touch with somebody. A high confidence. I can make this happen.
Yes. Yes, I can. So that's the core of what we're saying is, yes, I can get it done. I can make it happen. We did another event where we had to land a helicopter in Griffith Park, and it was hilarious. It was a city helicopter, and the people who wanted it was the government. And there was just one person blocking it, which was the park. And I was like, guys, the city owns you. You're the park. We're going to land the helicopter. Well, this is what you need to do. Okay, great. So we make a helicopter pad. Not a problem. Well, it needs to be this, this, and this. We need a fire truck there in case it crashes. Great. We're going to get a fire truck. So that is the key to, yes, this podcast, to what we're explaining. You just persist. You have purpose. You have intention. It's there. You're going to get it done. You can get it done. Anyone can get it done.
Well, you can get it done.
Well, there are other people who get other things done. LeBron James can win a championship, you know? You know, Mark Zuckerberg can build a social media app that takes over the world. Elon can make a car that's a submarine, you know?
Yes, but this is... I just watched an old classic video of Steve Jobs talking about this, and he expressed words to this effect. There is a disease that... that sometimes infects people, where they believe that 90% of the job is having a great idea.
I think I remember hearing this.
Yeah. No, he said, nothing in my experience shows that to be true. It's a disease of thinking. He said, what it really is you have that great idea that does matter, but then it's holding, he said, 5,000 different things in your head. Mm-hmm. All these different trade-offs, constant learning, because suddenly one day you realize, well, that thing that we thought would happen or that we could do, we can't do because there's a limit in the glass manufacturing process, or the engineering just isn't at the point that we can achieve it. But suddenly there's a new opportunity that's come along. And he said, you never produce at the end exactly what you imagined at the beginning, but you collect all of these people, great talent. He says, you need the best talent in the world. And then he used a beautiful metaphor. He said, close to where he used to live, there was this man at the end of the road who looked pretty scary and was kind of kept to himself and was a bit of a weird guy. But he went over to his garage one time. And in the garage there, he showed him this machine that he had. And it's just a little machine. And he just took just normal stones from the garden, put it in this machine, and started running it. And so it made this terrible noise, and it's just running and running. And he said he just ran it all night long. And so he came back the next day. Steve comes back the next day, and all of these normal stones everywhere else are now these beautifully shined, polished gems almost. Mm-hmm. And he loved that as a metaphor for the execution process.
Ah.
Execution, it's about bringing all this talent together and all these connections together who work on the thing, and they knock off all the edges and all the things that get in the way, and eventually you've got something that's polished and it's beautiful, and then you've executed it. I thought that this was a very lovely, succinct even way of describing what the execution process looks like. Your reaction?
I agree with you. I actually am going to Google this later to see if I can watch it, but I 100% agree. And I do, yes, you bring resources together, whether it's people and you're delegating or not, and you put it all together to achieve the common goal of what needs to be done.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world, and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the podcast princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast, or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.